afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5. And you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And if you can't remember any of that, you can go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's all there.
Simple Simon. And we have video on a lot of the shows since the first of the year here on in 2020. And I have added them not only to the pages for the programs, but to the archives. So you have a really quick link there if you just click on the archives and you'd rather see what was going on. The buffoonery. I don't know. Some days have more buffoonery than others.
Yeah.
Anyway, those links are in there for you in the archive as well. So thanks, Robert, for doing that. He sits just off camera. He's our in-studio entertainment. Let's see. What else? I guess I'm going to skip all the announcement things because we have way too much information to get to. And we've been dying to get our guest back here, Jesus Arredondo, to give us the rest of the story on all this fossil fuels and the enormous, I don't know, it's kind of a wedge issue, I guess we'll call it, fracking. You know, yeah. They throw it around like you're just supposed to hate it, but the numbers in California are staggering. Just in California. We're what, the fourth? Let's see how much we retained. We're the fourth largest consumer of
energy.
Energy.
Yep.
Yes.
Like
correct.
Anywhere?
Like in the world.
In the entire world.
Yeah.
Okay. And yet we import 74% of the fossil fuels used in California, but we claim to be going 100% renewable by 45.
By 2035, we want to ban internal combustion engines.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's right.
And I believe we're sitting really on working. The largest reserve of oil in the world. I think we're bigger than the Middle East, but we don't want to get
it.
Into that, you know, because it might
use it
upset.
And everything. Boo.
Yeah,
we'd rather
yeah.
import it from foreign countries rather than states that actually produce it here in the U.S. because we're mad that they vote for Trump. I don't. Why don't we like them? I forgot.
They like guns too.
Oh yeah. Oklahoma and those guys.
Evil people.
Okay. Well, just in case people thought there was a sensible explanation for all this, there it was, right there.
Yeah, that's it. As good as it's going to get.
That was the rookie recap. back to the expert.
Yeah. I don't want to gloss over fracking since that was the whole basis of the invitation to get folks to jump in. So. Why fracking? What's so special about fracking? So fracking extends the life of wells. So first you're going to go. It's kind of think of a fruit.
Your signal is breaking up in kind of a weird way. Oh. It's kind of getting distorted a little.
Is that better?
Oh yeah. Hey, that's pretty good.
All right, I'll hold the mic closer to me.
Something weird is going on.
I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Let's look at fracking from this. I was trying to think of a good analogy, and coming from farming, I'll use this analogy. When you extract oil or any kind of fossil fuel from the ground, the low-hanging fruit is the low-hanging fruit. So think of a fruit tree. The fruit you can reach is the easy one to get, so we're going to go get that first. And then increasingly, the fruit is higher. It's a little bit harder to get to, and it used to be that you know, you would send a younger person or somebody who was nimble enough to scurry up the tree and pull down the rest of the fruit. As time went on, technologies improved, and we were able to invent ingenious things like something to reach them and cradle the fruit as you brought it down so it wouldn't just fall to the ground and bruise. That's what's happened in fracking. That's what's happened with extraction. Increasingly, time has brought us newer and newer ways to extract that harder to get to oil. It's deeper in the ground or it's in areas that are geologically a little bit more difficult to get to. And so the term, the fracking term, which everyone hates, is been demonized into something horrible. It's, you know, you're not holding the 3-month-old baby as high as you can and screaming at it to get the fruit, although the baby doesn't know what it's doing. You know, it's almost like what I see, you know, fracking becoming, right? But it's not. This is the extension of the oil production. And so fracking is enhanced oil recovery technologies, like injecting steam into the ground. It loosens, some of those hydrocarbons, and we're able to, extract them a little bit easier. Sometimes it's water. It's flooding the deposits, forcing, the heavier oil to the top and, picking it off the top, making it easier to extract. Sometimes it's a mixture of water, mud, and sand. A lot of sand is used in the extraction process, but all of this is fracking. And then some of it uses, you're using a lot of what I would say are household mixtures of different chemicals. I'll call them chemicals. People don't like me to use that word in the industry, but I'll call them chemicals because that's exactly what it is. But it's not anything that you haven't heard of. It's ammonia. It's things that we use around the house. It's soap. Sometimes it's as simple as soap. And I know that, you know, the oversimplification, folks that are hearing this, that are anti-fracking, are going to say, oh, my God, this guy is lying, that it's not what it is. Well, I would say it's what you've been indoctrinated to believe it is versus what it actually is. And I've been in the industry, and I've permitted these projects, and I know exactly what it is. So, you know, hydraulic fracturing does use water pressure to increase you know, the area of contact, what are called well bore areas, and this is what forces the rock formations to release, like I said, some of those hydrocarbons, and that's what hydraulic fracturing actually is. It's not a mysterious evil thing. It's just the changing technologies that we've used for decades, and increasingly improving the way that the technology works. You know, in 1969, we did not have the sensoring equipment that we have today. Today, you get so much data out of one well. You've got sensors on the outside of the well. You've got sensors on the inside of the well. You have sensors at every joint of the well. Everywhere where there's a well, there is a sensor. So we have an incredible amount of data that's being produced on a minute-by-minute basis that can be viewed in real time. And this is called predictive analytics. So predictive analytics is trying to give us a picture of what could be happening in the well to make it as safe as humanly possible. And technology has brought us that safety that we didn't have in 1969. And, you know, had those technologies been available, you know, in 1969, would we have had the Santa Barbara spill that we had in 1969? I don't know, because, you know, it takes human error to miss something. And, you know, the machines are machines, and sometimes they do fail. But what we use today in the form of computer learning technologies is really, really remarkable. I mean, it is really, really amazing what we can see and what we can anticipate with the technologies that we have today. This is what is now being deployed. I know you're going to have a conversation on forestry and fires next.
We're losing your sound. How about this? Let's take a quick break, and sure. I'm going to have Travis pick up the phone with you and see if we can get the sound, because when you fade away, it's always at the good part, because the whole thing is the good part. We'll be right back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at We the People Radio. That was Bill. .us. We'll be right back. We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. Met the man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. Caught a harvest moon in Kansas, but they'd understand why God made those flyover states.
I bet that mile long Santa Fe. There. Little shout for the flyover states. These guys are producing while we are consuming. Busy out here in California consuming.
That's right.
From the Middle East. Yeah. Okay. All right, Jesus, back to you.
I hope you can hear me a little bit better now.
Yeah,
there's
good.
A little blowing on the microphone, so, but keep talking.
Well, I'll hope that that improves.
There we go.
Okay, maybe it was too close to me at this point.
So sorry.
One of the things that I wanted to just go back to is the amount of censoring equipment that we have in today's modern extraction process. It's something called predictive analytics. We monitor and we censor everything. We see it in real time to anticipate when there's a problem or when there's a potential problem. When predictive analytics and real-time monitoring tell us that there is, I mean, we can see now the most minor of vibrations begin, then there is a, they're under regulation from the state of California. We have to stop production so that you don't have well blowouts like you used to have, in years past. Not a real huge problem here in the state of California, mostly because, you know, here's another thing that Californians don't realize, and especially those that are fighting against fracking, inclusive of Governor Newsom, who is, in one of his most recent executive orders, he said he's requested that the Department of Environmental Protection look at banning fracking by 2024. Well, only about 20% of the state's production comes from wells that have undergone some kind of hydraulic fracturing. So 80% of the wells don't use this. I think that increasingly 0% of the wells would use any kind of hydraulic fracturing in California because it's just too difficult to permit. So I can tell you, being an expert at permitting these types of projects, you can give me a project that says, hey, we need a fracturing permit, and we'll go try to get it. You know, I'm not saying we're not going to be able to do it. I'm just telling you that we're going to go through a special kind of permitting hell in order to get it. So at the end of the day, it becomes a much, much more costly endeavor, and maybe you don't want to do it at the end of the day. And I think that that's how a lot of this will be abandoned eventually. It's not because those wells couldn't produce more. It's not that we couldn't become more energy independent. It's that we are electing not to. And we are choosing other things like an electrification that's going to require batteries. It requires other minerals that, guess what, we can't even get them here. We couldn't dig for them if we tried because they don't exist here. So we have to go get lithium and cobalt from other parts of the world that also don't like us, by the way. So you're trading your what could be true energy independence by producing more in California to true energy dependence by having to procure the technology, the minerals, that would be needed for the technologies that you presumed to make in California for the purposes of giving you energy independence, and that all of that is completely wrong. It is completely false on its face, and that's, you know, the hard question that I hope that policymakers will engage in 2021, that as we push towards these renewable ideas, that we realize that we're not really going to energy independence. We're becoming even more dependent. And I think that that's the more dangerous reality that we face here. So, you know, I'll go back to what we discussed before towards the end of the last show that we did, and that is that as California's population continues to increase or skyrocket, as we used to think it was going to, kind of all bets are off given COVID, in the coming years, we'll need an ever-increasing supply of affordable energy. And I would underscore the word affordable, because California has gotten so expensive. And to meet that growing demand, if we think that we're going to, by 2060, still hit that 51 million people target, that 30%, roughly 30% increase in population means a significant increase in the amount of energy that we will consume. If we're going to become even more dependent on other sources for that power, you know, that can only mean one thing, and that is that energy costs are going to go up.
Sure.
And if those energy costs are going to go up, then we have to figure out how we're going to bring those prices down.
Sure.
So, but let me just touch on so how expensive are we right now? So California gasoline prices, the latest figures are in, so I can give you brand new numbers. So right now California's average, which for August, which is the most recent numbers, is $3.23 a gallon. The premium above the rest of the U.S. is $2.11. That's a 52% to 52.9% difference. So that's remarkable, right? How is it that we're continuing to grow this much? So California right now has the second highest gasoline price among the U.S. states, behind only Hawaii. So congratulations, California.
Yeah, we've done a great job with that. And yeah, the sad part is that the influx of people into this state, I think, as a majority, are not people that can really afford those high energy costs.
Correct.
I mean, we're not importing high tech into California. We're exporting high tech. I mean, it's people are leaving, and what's filling the vacuum are middle to low income people that are finding it very difficult to live here. So,
well, and that's what's creating, I think that's what's going to create a challenge of homelessness, right? Because how are they going to pay for these high costs? And that's the one thing that I continue to scratch my head on and say, okay, listen, you know, and I've got more numbers from reports that are created and generated by the state of California for the state of California policymakers to understand what it's going to take. And to reach that 100% green future, the California Energy Commission commissioned a report that was produced for them and released. It's in draft form, so it's not finalized yet, but it's called the Senate Bill 100 Joint Agency Report. And it says that that in order to get to 100% green, we will need to add an annual cost of $66 to $74 billion a year. That's on top of the $100 billion that it costs us in energy today. So what does that translate to? Because, you know, those numbers are so cartoonish that it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's just never going to happen.
So here's how it translates. Right now, you pay an average of 19.61 cents per kilowatt hour for your electricity. That's what is multiplied by the number of kilowatt hours that you use in your home. And so let's say that on average it's a couple hundred dollars a month for your bill. In going when you go forward on a in those numbers, and you look at what would be the average added cost, we look at a 16-cent increase per kilowatt hour for that energy cost increase. So that's nearly doubling your average cost today. So if the average energy bill is $200, just for the sake of argument, and some people have smaller places and might be a lot less, but some people have larger places and might be a lot more, you would double your energy bill. Double your energy bill.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we survive? And that's just a portion of it, right? So if that's a portion of it. And then there was another study that was released by the California Air Resources Board, another study commissioned by them, and they said, gosh, in order to quickly get to all-electric transportation future, in the next 5 years, we need to spend $15 to $30 billion. The report is called the 2020 Mobile Source Strategy Report. That also is in draft form, by the way. It's a 145-page short read. So if you have an insomnia problem, I would encourage you to log on to the CARB website and try to read this fun document. I did manage to get through it, but that's another story. So I guess, you know, I go back to I put it back into my Democratic friends, you know, on their plate, and I said, you know, I'm a reader of history, and I remember a very good quote that one of my favorite Kennedy quotes, and he said, "We all cherish our children's future." That's true, but has California forgotten that quote?
Yes.
Has Democratic California forgotten that quote? Because consider the impact of these soaring energy costs, the impact to consumers, to today's children and their future. Yes, it's in the name of climate change. I get it. But at any cost? And underscore at any cost. Or should there be a moderated approach that will not forfeit the financial future of today's children in the form of exacerbated energy costs for generations to come?
Yeah.
So, that's the challenge. And I think that's what the policymakers really need to talk through. And it's not that it has gone ignored, because I have a very good friend at the California Public Utilities Commission. His name is Edward Randolph. He's the director of energy policy at the PUC. And he told legislative members in a hearing earlier this year that for every $1 billion of investment by the in-state utilities, so this is PG&E, Southern California Edison, SDG&E, that translates to every $1 billion of investment translates into a 7% increase in electricity rates to consumers. In a discussion last month to an association of energy companies, Randolph again said that the hardening of the grid, and this is what you're going to talk about next week with your forestry expert. The grid, hardening the grid, making it stronger and more fire-resistant, is going to cost us an average of between 20 to 40% increase in state utility costs over the next 2 years. So a 20 to 40% increase in rates.
In 2 years, that's going to be...
In 2 years.
That's going to be very difficult to swallow.
That is remarkable, right?
Yeah.
But these are the
policies that have been imposed by legislators as part of, you know, getting to our new future world. But again, I beg the question, should it happen at any cost? And I don't believe it should.
Yeah, that's
so,
a big fat
you know, will
no.
consumers react to that? Will they speak up to it and speak out about these looming costs? I hope they do. I hope that people are listening. I hope they're paying attention. Because this is the critical discussion that I think legislators and policymakers must have. It is paramount that discussion happens, because otherwise I think we're forfeiting our future.
Yeah.
Yes. But in California, they always have, you know, a new distraction. And I would venture to say that marijuana has become the major distraction.
Dumb them down.
Yep.
The problem is, if you go down this road in California and these rates do jump like you're talking about, other states are heading down the same road. I mean, this isn't just a California issue. So, I mean, it's It's coming to get you.
The guys that are producing are going to produce more, and those states are going to – populations will boom. All right. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. I've already spent it, bro. It's all going to pot. It's all going to pot. Whether we like it or not, the best I can tell, the world's gone to hell and they're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee just couldn't hit the spot. Got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot. We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Give a man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps now. He's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
Yep, California's going to become a net importer of government cheese and marijuana.
Yeah.
If they think we're going to pay 40% more for power.
I know. We were talking on the break. You know, there's a tremendous amount of people that are on government aid in the state of California, and their utilities are going to go up, too.
And they qualify for reduced fees on utility. So how's that going to work?
Yeah, well, they're still going to pay more, and they can't. They can't.
Yeah,
I mean, they just don't have the money, and I don't know. I think you're going to see homeless, homeless go.
So, Jesus, just out of curiosity, because I know you have to sit through meetings with people who, with a straight face, tell you that they're going to do this stuff and it's going to work out. Do you think they actually believe that?
You know, I without giving you the name of the person, let's just say it. Very high.
It's not Arnold Schwarzenegger again?
No, this was yeah. After Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
I already used his name. So, this was at one of the energy regulatory agencies. The gentleman, so I just gave it away, it's a man, claimed credit for being the guy who said, I'm the one who convinced Governor Brown that a renewable portfolio standard of 100% all renewable power in the very near future is the right way to go. And he was new to that regulatory body, and I said, do you really believe it? And he said, oh, 100%, absolutely. Why not? And I said, well, I see all the problems, right? You know, California must and can become more self-sufficient, but it's an all-of-the-above energy approach, which includes oil and natural gas. And, yeah, renewables, but we know that renewable intermittency is the problem. He didn't understand that. And it's coming home to roost with the blackouts that we had on August 14th and 15th. We talked on the last show about our dependence on the rest of the West for electricity.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's shocking in and of itself, right? You know, 20 to 30% of our electricity we depend on from the rest of the West. Well, think of these numbers. 70% of our oil we depend on, you know, countries like Saudi Arabia. 87% of our natural gas comes from out of state. Now, thankfully, that's still coming from the U.S. because it's just too darn expensive to ship it from someplace else. But think about that. You know, 87% of our natural gas that we use right now is coming from out of state. 87%. 70% of our oil that we need every single day comes from out of country. So these are really stupid numbers that are too giant to ignore, in my view, because these are numbers that could be reduced significantly if we did it in state. And you would be putting people to work in state. You would be generating income in state instead of sending that check someplace else. And so I think the future of California must be access to reliable and affordable energy. And that's going to be the key to the standard of living of California's families and communities if we're going to keep California golden. Now, if we don't care about keeping California golden and it's going to be California tarnished, then keep going down the path that we're on. And, you know, next, you know, in a year or two, I'll still do your show, but I'll be calling in from somewhere else in the West.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, I think you and a lot of other people, I mean, it gets to a kind of a breaking point where, yeah, it's expensive to move and it's going to be a matter of starting over and kind of reestablishing a lot of stuff, but you just can't afford not to do it. I mean, it gets to that point where you can't afford to stay anymore. I mean, people are seeing that now. Imagine when it hits a 40% increase in your energy bill. I mean, that's a determining factor.
Do you think they'll be smart enough to actually just like creep it up, or do you think they'll do like these just like they've done with gas?
Well, gas, yeah, they jumped it like 27 cents in one whack.
40 cent tax on every gallon. Like what?
Yeah, so the hard part is this, the utilities don't own the energy producing resources. So they have to buy it from somebody else.
Right.
There's a credit risk. So now we're talking about finances. So, from a credit perspective, I'm happy to give you a credit card, even though you have, the worst, financial background and record, and you could still get the visa. It's just that your rate is going to be 22%, and because of my great credit history, mine is only 4%. So you'll still get be able to buy the power. It's just going to cost you a whole lot more, and so it makes it really, really difficult to afford you an incremental rate increase. Unless you're talking about that incremental rate increase lasting 15 years. And where are we going to be in 15 years? Well, we're going to be even more expensive because presumably we're going to be nearly at 100% renewable power. So that exacerbated cost is, on top of, we're compounding policies basically before we can get to, and we talked about this on the last show, before
right.
we can get to 17% renewables, we had already changed it to 20. Before we could get to 20, we changed it to 33. Before we could get to 33, we moved it to, we keep moving the goalpost. And now we can't move it beyond 100. But now what the realities are is that these costs are coming to us. And rather than depend on our vast resources from diverse types, I wish that California policymakers would look at, the vast oil, natural gas, and yes, renewable resources that can make us more self-sufficient and secure. And because we have the workforce, and we definitely have the technology to develop those resources safely and responsibly for decades to come, but I think we should be doing that more here at home and not depending on, I mean, when you think of lithium, we got to go to China because we just, there was that big promise of, and why Tesla built that big gigafactory in Nevada, and they're discovering that the lithium that they thought was there is not really there to the abundance that we thought it was. Uh-oh, big problem. So
yeah.
Now it has to come from China. What about cobalt? Well, cobalt only comes from the Congo. And last time I checked, and you guys have done, you've done shows on Africa and that part of the world, you understand it better than I do, but the Congo is not exactly a very reliable or
no.
safe place.
No,
and they
pretty.
Certainly don't give a hoot about caring for children and children's issues, because it's the children that are mining that cobalt right now that the Tesla driver is enjoying in his vehicle.
Sure. And they care even less about whether or not America has batteries. I mean, they've got big problems over there that are on the front page.
What breaks these guys? I mean, what breaks this cycle? Because it seems
it's going to be
California's.
And I think that you hit it on the head earlier, which is that 40%. I think it's the cost shock, because
right.
it's going to take. I think it's going to take the public to say, you know what, this is too much. This is too much. And that's why I think that, you know, I ask the question, you know, is it at any cost? Because I don't think it should be at any cost. You know, it seems like since the Schwarzenegger administration, we have tried, every governor, every administration, and it's only two governors, I recognize that, but each of those two governors has tried to one-up itself. Each of those legislators have tried to one-up the previous one in a hurry to create their green footprint, right? I think that they all saw what former Vice President Al Gore did and thought, well, I'm going to get rich too. So 17%, no, that's not good enough. Let's go to 20%. No, that's not good enough. So the next guy said, I'm going to carry a bill to 33%. And then the next guy said, well, I'm going to carry a bill to 50%. And the next guy said, I'm going to carry a bill to 100%. And the governors in each of those subsequent legislative years said, yeah, because if I sign it, I signed it. So it's my bill.
Right.
So this is the craziness that we're living in, right? And because politicians are politicians, they're moving on. They're not, I mean, you know, Kevin De Leon is now a city councilman in Los Angeles. He's behind SB 100, right? Does anybody remember him? Not really.
Mm-mm.
But he thinks that everybody remembers him. Well, I think that everybody's going to be cursing him when they're 40, when we highlight that that 40% increase on your energy bill is, you know, send a thank you to Kevin De Leon.
Let's, we've got to take a quick break, but I'd like to touch a little bit more on the fact that I think people have the perception that, you know, you drill for oil, you strike oil, and it gushes out of the top of the derrick, and it sprays oil all over the ground, and it's a huge environmental mess. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about how the technology in this drilling has really improved to a point where it's not as environmentally damaging as what
whole,
I think
the
a
whole
lot
risk
of,
thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's as damaging as a lot of people think it is. Maybe
Well, they keep saying, oh, it's starting all these earthquakes and all that. Can you talk to any of that?
Sure.
Oh, awesome. Okay, we'll be back quickly. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All my wolves begin to howl.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area, KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network. Not to put too fine a point on it, but you know, we go when we've gone too far?
Well, I think when it hits people in the wallet and they realize they've been led down this rosy path, maybe you know, it might be too late at that point because industry is going to completely collapse if we don't get on the right track here. But it always comes down to money, and when people don't have any money left.
Yeah,
they're going to look around.
How much pain are you willing to take?
Yeah. And go, what the
Well,
heck
and it always
happened?
Hits the rural areas first because we drive the most. So people in the city are busy, you know.
So before we run out of time,
or whatever they're doing,
talk to us a little bit about the difference between today and in the past when it comes to extracting oil and gas, and how much cleaner it is actually than it used to be.
Yeah, the extraction process itself today is fairly benign compared to what it was before. You know, if you go back in history and, you know, read what it was like for Standard Oil to extract oil from the ground back, you know, turn of the century, 1900s, very, very different than what it is today. The amount of surplus or extra extract that just got basically thrown out. We didn't understand it back then. You know, it wasn't until a guy named Henry Ford invented the horseless carriage that we understood that that extra residue from the refining process was gasoline and that it could be used in an internal combustion engine to make it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until then, literally, it was thrown away. It was poured out, and it flowed into rivers and streams, and it made a disaster. But we started cleaning up, you know, at that time, and ever more, you know, we are now, I would say, that 98% of the emissions in the extraction process are captured. So that's pretty awesome compared to what it was and what it is in the rest of the world still today. In the U.S., we have we have the EPA, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. We have air emissions rules at a federal level. Every state has their own EPA-like structure.
Oh yeah, you get
in
the
California,
water board,
we've complicated
the air board.
Even more with CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. So everything is even more and more protected, and I think we try to create a process that is as benign as possible. Nobody wants the emissions. I mean, that's the fallacy, I think, of viewing the oil industry and the petroleum industry in this fashion, or even the energy industry in this fashion, that, well, they're just gross polluters, they don't care. That's not true. That's not true at all.
No.
We live by these rules that are so cumbersome that the last thing I want to do is violate any of those rules, because the financial covenants that allow for the development of those projects are tied to my violations. So if I violate one rule, guess what? I lose financing. And I can't lose financing. These things are so tied together, and this is such a capital-intensive process that one hiccup, one violation, and you could ruin yourself financially forever.
Right.
Because no one will come back to you. So the notion that the industry doesn't care and that it's reckless and careless is completely, completely false. The extraction process is so controlled. There are, if I looked at one of my Venn diagrams of what it takes to extract oil, one barrel of oil, just as an example, there are 36 steps. From extraction to a holding container, and not one ounce of refining has occurred at that point. Not one ounce.
Right.
So this is just the extraction process. So it's not the blowing out wells that you may have seen in movies. Yes, you still have the, you know, massive failures, catastrophic failures, you know, like what we had in the Gulf. A few years back, those are horrific. But when you look at those and you do root cause analysis investigations, you find that there was human error involved. And so, so when you went to, back to your question, you said, you know, the technology has improved. It absolutely has. So I think that some of that, when it's fully automated and it's allowed to be fully automated, and it is already. But when human intervention isn't there to screw something up, the machines actually, the learning technology that the technology of today has is really remarkable. It stops a lot of accidents.
Oh, it does. I used to call, I worked for a vendor that called on the logging industry, and a lot of the mills have cogen plants attached to them.
Run the operation.
Wood chips, yeah.
And
so they all have these big stacks where, you know, the emissions come off. What people don't realize is every stack you see has sensors in it. And if the, the carbons or anything go over a certain amount coming out of those stacks, it goes right to Sacramento and boom, they get notified in seconds. And that thing is either fixed or shut down immediately. So there's the pollution end of it.
Yeah, the idea that you're just getting away with
Just getting away with dumping stuff in the air. It just doesn't happen anymore. It really doesn't.
That's exactly right. The steam boilers in those units are fluidized beds that are capturing most 99% of the particulate matter in biomass. Is phenomenal. I mean, that technology didn't used to exist, but it exists today. And exactly as you said, you know, I always tell my clients, none of you look good in orange. And I don't mean that disparagingly, but neither do I. And I don't want to wear a county jumpsuit that says I'm going to jail.
Right.
So we're not going to allow you to violate anything because the sensoring equipment isn't going to allow you. And the only time it does happen, because it has happened in the past, in the last 10 years, it happened once at a biomass plant. There was a dumb operator that physically removed a safety and it blew himself up. I mean, he was fortunate that he didn't kill himself in the process, sustained very, very bad injuries. The facility never ran again like it was supposed to. And that company lost its contract and it's being sued and, you know, it's 10 years in litigation. Nobody wants that. And so it's ruinous financially to everyone involved when something like that happens. So the notion that these companies don't care and that they flaunt all of these rules, that's absolutely not true.
Yeah, it's not
true. You're right.
And I think to go back, you know, and do offshore drilling, which I know is really a dirty word, but we can do these things safely without destroying the environment and dig us out of this hole we're falling into right now. And people just need to understand that and vote that way.
Well, we have the resources. Yeah. And, continuing to put people in who are claiming that pie in the sky is actually edible is a giant mistake.
Yeah.
Hey, Seuss, we have like, I don't know, a minute left or so, and so we don't just cut you off. We're going to have to make you come on with us again in the future because this subject just never ends. And since you watch it so carefully, would you do us a favor? And as this policy stuff evolves, would you shoot us an email, and it's like, okay, people need to know.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you know, come January or December, I mean, the legislature comes back to check in second week of December after the election. Going to start to see, you know, new policies emerge, new legislation promoted. And I think that, you know, at that time, you know, I'm watching these things anyway. So as I start to see those policies emerge, I promise I would love to come back and
talk about some of the new policies that are coming. Pass them. Yeah, so we can get that word out to people. We would really appreciate it. Jesus Arredondo, we love having you on. It's been action-packed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. I look forward to coming back.
All right.
Thank you. All right. You can find everything about the show at WeThePeopleRadio.us.